It's a very interesting day today, December 25th, 2017. The question is whether you learn Torah at night, or you spin the dreidel, or you play chess. There's the famous picture of the two Rebbeim, the 6th and 7th Rebbe, playing chess mittel nach. But I don't know, I grew up among Catholics, and they were good neighbors. We got along, particularly the Italians and the Jews got along very well. Okay.
Right.
Someone's anchors, and it's like the Chafetz Chaim used to say, he would learn Shabbos afternoon, Erev Tisha B'Av, and they said to the Chafetz Chaim, Noheg L'chumra, after Chatzalta, so he said, Lichvalzones, I'll give me Schmitz in Gan Eden, I will learn Erev Tisha B'Av the Shabbos. So, alright, we have to go further. The rocket shover, they say, learned on Tisha B'Av, and they said to him, Tisha B'Av learning, he said, Pikuach Nefesh, if he doesn't learn, he can't live. So, alright, we're not on that madrega, let's put it that way, though. Now, I want to say something, I never was so happy, I couldn't believe it. You know, they give out the freebies, so people say, look at all the freebies they give out here. So I tell everyone, print is very cheap today. No one realizes it. It's one of the few things in life that are unbelievably cheaper. When my first book, they had to set the type by hand, the first edition of Bernard Rebel. Today, you know how Artsville is printed? They send a copy of what they want to China, tell them how many copies they want. Within 2 months, they get back 10,000 copies, exactly what they gave them. All you're paying for is paper and binding. So over the years, I've had many students, and in the Kollel, twice it happened that students mentioned to me that their second generation Balei Tshuva, and their parents became from seeing Fiddler on the Roof and the song tradition. And if you listen, it's on the website, if I said it 20 years ago, 30 years ago. So I once said that there's a certain aspect of Kedusha to that guy, to Fiddler on the Roof. Is this the little boy I carried? Is this the little girl I pray? I don't remember growing older. When did they, if you have a Hasidic inclination, a Musar inclination, with that little rhyme, I could speak for hours Makarot from Chazal. So two people went to see the play, American kids who grew up in America, and tradition, they started asking, who are we? And their sons, Amos Machen, and fabulous young men. In the weekend issue, here's an article on Smadamo Reig. She was an actress. She's from Holland. She's Dutch. Parents are survivors. Mad at God. Totally irreligious. She acted in the play, the only Jewish actor when they put on Fiddler on the Roof. She was the only Jew. Everyone else was a guy. And she acted it out hundreds of times, and it got to her heart. Who am I? That's what she looks like today, living in Israel. Chazra b'tshuva, l'kavod u'l'tiferet. Now, in relation to I see one new face here. I don't know what you fell into, but this is in the middle of an interruption of one of my regular classes of a number of weeks. Hakarat HaTov. I reached a certain stage in life where one has to thank the Ribono Shel Olam. So I want to thank the Rebbeim who had influence on me. So far we've spoken about Rabbi Henoch Fishman, Shanghai, Rabbi Meir Kahana, Bnei Akiva. We're going to finish up Rabbi Aaron Cutler in a minute, Lakewood. And I have to tell you, in relation to my lectures on to Meir Kahana, I got positive comments and negative comments. So I just want to tell you the positive comment. I can't believe this. It's evidently online. I'll give it out. Someone. It's a list of 36 Rabbanim, among them Gedolei Yisrael, praising Rav Meir Kahana. So I'm on the list too. They're quoting, I'm not from the Gedolei Yisrael, I'm on the list, the Asuf Suf. But they're quoting a shir I gave 6-7 years ago. But I'm in very, very good company. Okay, so that's the positive. The negative is from my dear virtual student, Henry Silverman, and he writes, "My collection of Meir Kahana is different from yours. He was clearly charismatic, and a number of my contemporaries adopted his cadence and style in their speech. Dov Hilkin, that's the politician, took his manner of pronunciation and presentation directly to Rabbi Kahana. My objection to him was always about the people he recruited and the tools he did not give them. He tended to attract kids who were seeking a hero and were in some way lost or unhappy. This was not universally so, but a goodly percentage were seeking their way in the world and were seduced by his charisma. They were not trained fighters and went out to fight. My really big beef with him was what I called the Brooklyn College pogrom. Somehow the JDL group and black militants got into a confrontation at Brooklyn College. I think I may be suppressing the details, but I remember Kahana inciting these kids and a bunch of blacks showed up to fight. They were not street fighters. These were people who knew their way around violence and it was a slaughter. Kahana was nowhere to be found. If you are going to lead a mass movement and advocate fighting, be there to lead and teach the people to fight. I could never forgive him for that. Otherwise, a very interesting lecture. P.S. Howard Beach is right near Kennedy Airport and adjacent to Cedarhurst." So it balances. There's so much more to talk on, Mayor. You all know that while I'm not, I thank Mayor, I was not cloned by him and I made clear where I differ. But I want to show you, I saw praise and negativism. And of course, he's absolutely right. In the Israeli army, they're famous, those of us who serve in the army, you know, one of the first things we were taught was acharai. The officers lead in battle, don't stay behind. And we have a very high percentage of officers who fall in battle as a result. And the chain of command changes in the middle of battle. I don't know how many of you have seen a battlefield, but you can plan everything beautifully. You can train a soldier for 2 years. You go into battle and within 20, 30 minutes, everything goes haywire. It's not according to the plans and you have to take over, take command. And, you know, people have won awards here where a lowly sergeant had to take command because the major fell in battle, the lieutenant fell in battle, and he has to come over and be a man. So there's a lot to be said for that. Okay, now back to the more important issues for Baron Cutler. Yes, so I described yesterday, I gave you a feeling of Lakewood, what it was like, the interaction between the students and Rebaron. And although I was there a brief time relatively, but it left a very, very deep impression on me. And all my life, even this very moment this morning, I was Xeroxing material that I'm working on, lectures, Be'ezrat Hashem, the Ribbono Shel Olam should privilege me to give, on the Litvashi Yeshivat. And all my life, I've published thousands of pages on concepts that I was exposed to in Lakewood and NYU, but Lakewood was a very intense experience. Now, what I ended off the class with yesterday is something subject to a doctoral dissertation, and it's a sad story. I just have to state the facts. I haven't researched it thoroughly. A lot of accusations have been made. There's no question that Reb Aaron had a negative attitude towards Chabad. The story I told you, Shor Shanaga Chatapara, that was the rubric we heard in Lakewood. That was part of it. And that raises a very interesting question. Are we allowed to engage in semantics on halachic parts of Torah Shebaal Peh? It's an interesting question. We certainly engage in semantics on the Torah. We'll come to this with Rav Lessin. I'm going to be preaching this Shabbos morning at 8:45 in Young Israel, Hollywood, Florida. Or 8:15, I think my slot is, it's before the davening, 8:15 to 8:45. All right, I'm going to give them hell. But what I have to talk about, I have to be honest. I know what I want to say, but I want to, you know, I don't want to say Rakefet says. I'm going to squeeze the Torah to fit into my words. Luckily, the Rav says this, after I gave the, it's not for now, I'll talk about it in Hollywood, but after I gave the dresser and got an A from Rabbi Herbert S. Goldstein in homiletics, Decades later, I get a tape from Manny Hosa, and there's the Rav giving my drasha, Baruch Shekibanti. Then I looked into the Malbin, and I found out both Rakefet and the Rav were thieves. I told you the Rav's but Genuva Tiyom, Genuva Tilal. He says there's no Chiddush in Drush. If two Darshanim say the same thing, it's a sign they're both robbing from the same person. And we both robbed, evidently, intuitively, from the Malbim. But with all due respect to Mori Rebbe and the Malbim, we have a thought to express. We're going to squeeze the words to fit our thought. Are you allowed to do that with Halacha, Shesh, and tell Vit the Yetzer Hara, knock the hell out of your Yetzer Tov? Sure, you're just a little para. And this is a legitimate question. Hasidim would answer, absolutely, yes, you're allowed to indulge in homiletics. If I were to ask Reb Noach Bornstein, my Rebbe last year in high school, the top Talmud of Reb Velvel, the Brisker Rav, if I were to ask Reb Noach, I don't think he'd be too happy with such an approach. I don't think Reb Yeruchim Gerelik would be too happy with such an approach. I will ask Mark, okay, you should ask Rabbi Abba Brandspiegel. Let's see what he has to say. Because Rabbi Abba is a Litvak, but he's Nishta Geborna. I told you. I told him when he was sitting shiver for his wife, Lo Aleinu, and he couldn't believe my memory. I said, how many times do you say, I heard this from him at least 40 years earlier, and I never forgot it, that when his grandfather walked into the Gerer Rebbe, the Re'em, Rav Avraham Mordechai, the second Gerer Rebbe, when his grandfather, the third Gerer Rebbe, the Sfatemis' son, when his grandfather walked into the Re'em, that was when Ger reached its peak. This was they built Agudat Yisrael. The Rebbe stood up for his grandfather. His grandfather was the Malamid Dar, the key of his grandfather. So I'm curious to what Abba says. But okay, that was part of the problem. And another part of the problem is obviously the messianic tendencies, which opens the Pandora's box. Do we talk about Mashiach? Do we tell the students Mashiach is going to come tomorrow? This is a very tantalizing question. In Ababanel 24, Sukkot of 1973, this exact question exploded in front of my face. It was a terrible period. The Yom Kippur War, I was here already 5 years, and being here 5 years, I already knew tens and tens, if not hundreds, of people who were killed. BMT, which later gets this building, etc., two of the madrichim of BMT, BMT was how old? 4 or 5 years old. Two of the madrichim never came back, were killed in the war. That was a terrible experience. And everyone was very depressed. Until today, there's no way to explain how we survived. It's just Yad Hashem. Had the Egyptians had any seichel, they would have gone all the way to Beersheba. You know why they stopped. They figured it's a trap. It can't be that they're not soldiers waiting to kill us. And you know what Kissinger, a Jew, did to us? He tied Golda Meir's hands. So thousands were killed. And how Siri didn't reach Tel Aviv, we can't explain until today. All right. Everyone wanted solace. So a Rebbe in the BMT, a wonderful Rebbe, he's a very important Rav today, he's a Gon, he's a Tzaddik, Rav David Chai Kohen of Bat Yam, if you recognize the name. He's a Taimani, he's a Talmud, he was a Hezder, he was a paratrooper, a Hezdenik, Talmud of Rav Tzvi Yehuda Cook, and married to, interestingly enough, Reb Leitzer Suva's granddaughter, Reb David Leib Suva's daughter, Adina. It's the first wedding I attended in Israel. And I was an aide to the Ketuvah, and behind my back, Reb Tzvi Yehuda Cook asked if I'm a Shomer Shabbos. He saw someone without a beard. How can this person be from? Impossible. So Baruch Hashem, people testified that I'm a Shomer Shabbos. Okay. So he told the students, brought down Kabbalistic proofs that Mashiach is coming. This is Muhammad Gog Magad, Mashiach is coming. So the boys asked me, Rebbe, I also was a popular Rebbe, what do you think? I said, look, I hope Mashiach is coming, but I wouldn't talk that way. Because if he doesn't come, I don't want you to feel like Shaphai Tzvi. I lifted you up, and then you were shot down. So that was Sukkos. He was the king. I was the fallen victim. Pesach, I was the king, and he was the fallen victim. Everyone said, where's Mashiach? So you see, it's a very delicate question. On the other hand, what do you want me to do? Not teach that it's one of the Kimuli Karim? You understand? Where do you strike the balance? So it could be that that too, Reb Aaron, they were already worried with the fifth, with the sixth Rebbe, not the fifth Rebbe, the Rashab. There was not so much messianicness. Also, I have to say, if you study the history of Hasidus, you will find with all the Rebbeim, there is messianic overtones. It wasn't just said about the Lubavitcher. You see it in Europe already. They said it about other Rebbeim, Poland. So it's a very, very delicate question. But there's no doubt that that also played a role in the Baron's antagonism to Chabad. We all remember my lectures on Rabbi Yeshua and Rabbi Yitzchak Kutna. Rabbi Yitzchak Kutna too, remember? He went hysterical when they put up a sign, L'tshuva, L'geula, if we do all do tshuva, we'll have the geula. He told the students in Chaim Berlin, if I ever see that sign up again, I'll kick out the person who put it up out of the yeshiva. I'll usher on you going to 770. So it's a delicate question. Let the question hang fire. But there's no question there was a lot of anti-Chabad feeling. And also the concept of Bitul HaTorah. And you know, would I ever stand on a corner giving out tefillin, come put on tefillin, did you hear a lulav and etrog, did you hear shofar? I'm a litvak. You don't want to put on tefillin, I got to tell you to put on tefillin, go fly a kite, you stupid idiot. You understand? I'm going to stand. And Chabad, it's a totally different viewpoint. Whenever I get to, I try to get to Hadar once a week and have lunch out with Margaret Greggs. I love Greggs. And if you go Tuesday, I told you the Chabadnik at the Shulcha teaching Chumash, she is fabulous. Chaya Mashka Handel. How does it go? Not Chaya Mashka, no. It's she's named after the previous Rebbe, Dina. Dina, what's the first name? The previous Rebbe's wife. It's the sixth Rebbe's wife she's named after. So, and not Chaim Mashka. Chaim Mashka is the seventh Rebbe's wife. Dina, the name escapes me now, but if anyone can help me, no? Okay, if not, it'll come back later. Dina, what do you think? No, you can't guess. Anyway, she's fabulous. Handel is the last name, okay? So, you see, there's a Chabadnik from America making the rounds, putting on tefillin. And to me, it's amazing. I see Sfada kids with kippah on their heads are waiting in line to put on tefillin. Ribbono shel Olam, I want to smack their faces. You didn't daven this morning. You're waiting for this guy to come by and put on tefillin and say, Shema, what's going on here? Well, I don't know. I don't have an answer. I would like to think maybe they davened in the morning and they want the guy to feel good so you can put on tefillin again and you can say Shema 1,000 times a day. It's just divrei Torah. So I don't know. I don't know what the answer is. But the antithesis was there. Now, why is this so important? I'll tell you why. It also reflects on contemporary Israeli events the last 40, 50 years. Rav Shach was anti-Chabad, even beyond Reb Aaron Kaplan. I need not tell you that the joke that makes the rounds, which every joke has a bit of truth in it, the closest thing to Yiddishkeit is Chabad. And you know what went on here with Israeli politics. I lived it, I saw it, I experienced it. And people would always ask me, where did Rav Shach become so anti-Chabad? And you see, the answer is Kletz. Rav Shach was not a Talmud of Reb Aaron Kotler. He already was a Talmud Chaver. Rav Shach was a Talmud of Reb Aaron Kotler's father-in-law, Rabbi Zalman Meltzer. Now, Rabbi Zalman, I can't conceive that he was anti-Chabad. But somehow the seeds were there in Slutsk, which later, after World War I, moves to Kletsk, after World War II to Lakewood. And this is Rav Shach as well as Reb Aaron. Okay, so I wanted to add that to what I said yesterday. Then problems come up, and here's what has to be researched. If you're familiar with the work now on Varhatsala, so a lot of research has been done. I scratched the surface with my work on Reblesa Silva, but I did not have available to me the Varhatsala papers. Within 10, 15 years after doing my work on Reblesa Silva, the Varhatsala papers were given to Yeshiva University, and Efi Zuraf, from the, that's the Rabbi Zuraf of BTA's son, Dr. Zuraf, did a PhD at Hebrew U on the Varhatsala papers. And he already raises the issue of, with the religious Jews getting more money, he accuses the Varhatsala of favoring the Mir Yeshiva. I don't think that accusation is fair, because when you give tzedakah, you have a right to give who you want, you understand? People give to a charity that means something to them. So I don't think that accusation is correct. But if you're following what's come up now, when people come up with more documents and the internet and the documents go all over the world, they find that Rabbi Aaron, when he came to America, he directed Varhatsala money, and at times he put in a stipulation, not for Chabad, this is for the Litvashi Yeshiva. And the Chabad can do their own thing, we're not responsible. Is it true, is it not true, is it fair, isn't it fair? This has to be researched. But the problem is real. And as I ended off yesterday, our only nechama, or to me a big nechama, is that take a look, Lakewood gets involved with outreach today. They're working like Chabad, except they work differently. It's a Litvish outreach. But Lakewood has produced so many Talmidei Chachamim, so many Rabbanim, you have to find jobs for them. By the 1990s, this concept of a community kollel took over America. Telz got involved, Chafetz Chaim got involved, Yeshiva University got involved, Torah Mitzion, it's now all over the world. And Lakewood, and some of the Lakewood kollelim, you take a look in Los Angeles, Beit Yaakov, Beit Jacob Synagogue, which is far from a right-wing shul, they house a Lakewood kollel. And it works very simple. You learn two Siddurim a day, and the third Seder, you're teaching the community. You're out there with the people. You're running classes. You're running chugim, as we call it here. And that's outreach. On that level, they're no different than Chabad. Chabad has the biggest extension education. That's the word I'm looking for, extension. Extension education of Torah studies in the world. What Chabad has, I participated in their retreat. 1,200 people from all over the world, and they only allow people to come who have studied for one full year already with their Chabad Shaluach, wherever it is in the course of the world. And I told you, it's a sight to see. A guy gets shlishi, he pledges $72,000. A guy gets shishi, another $72,000. It's unbelievable, and outreach. Not all of them, but they're doing a job. Lakewood, but Chabad is much more, of course, with the tefillin, with the menorahs. Now in Tel Aviv, the left wing is going crazy. I understand Chabad plastered the city with chanukiyot, with menorahs. You understand, people, you don't know what's going on here. Hadata. They came up with a new word that we're forcing religion down their throats. All we're doing is that they should have some Jewish consciousness. Their children shouldn't wind up in Cape Town and Los Angeles and Johannesburg. I've been all over the world, Melbourne. Wherever I have been, I've heard people walking on the streets speaking Hebrew, lo aleinu. So you see, Chabad and Lakewood ultimately maybe be a Mota Mashiach. The two Shvatim will unite in dignity like last week's Haftorah. Now, I want to say something else as well. What's very fascinating are the students that I met in Lakewood, or heard about in Lakewood, that were totally part of Lakewood the early 50s, and what happened to them. And here too, it established lifetime relationships, lifetime feelings, l'tov, or not so good. The most famous Talmud in Lakewood was a Bronx boy. His parents owned a wholesale vegetable market in Hunts Point Market. Anyone from the Bronx? Steve, you know what I'm talking about. And his name was Yaakov Schiff. Born, bred, American, like apple pie, like cherry pie, a total American. Yankel Shiv, I remember when I came to Lakewood, this was the old Litvashe, as I said to you, I explained this in Ranana. In Europe, in the Europeisha Yeshiva, the Yeshiva Litzirin, Rabbi Steinman, was the Rosh Yeshiva of Panovich Yeshiva Litzirin. So Dov is asking, how can he be the Gadol HaDais? Rosh Yeshiva Litzirin. You understand? Rakefet taught at one time in MTA. That doesn't make me the Gadol HaDais, right or wrong? Okay. You're missing the point. The Yeshiva Litzirin was the most important yeshiva you'll ever attend. That's where they taught you how to learn. The famous yeshiva, Mir Slabatka Velojim, they were not yeshiva who taught you how to learn. They were great yeshiva because thousands were told, hundreds and hundreds were there learning together. But if you didn't know how to learn when you got to Mir, you're not going to find out in Mir. There was no focal shear. Reb Lazy Yehuda Finkel was the Rosh Yeshiva, but he was not a tipus like Reb Chaim that revolutionized learning. So the important yeshiva, what you call the yeshiva, let's see, I'll give you an example. Rabbi Hanan Wasserman, Branovich. No, that was the yeshiva where you knew, where you were taught how to learn. From there, you went to Mir. You went to Slabatka. Another example, Reb Shimon Shkup, Grodno, Bryans. Reb Shimon, great Rosh Yeshiva, taught you how to learn. From there you went on, but you never learned how to learn again. You were Talmud of Reb Shimon. Reb Shmuel Rizovsky, the first Panovich Rosh Yeshiva, Zeichet Tzadik Levracha, he was the Talmud of Reb Shimon. When he came to Mir, he was a finished product. You follow? Reb Steinman was the most important Rosh Yeshiva you'll have, because if that's Panovich Litzirim, that's where you learn how to learn. Oh, by the way, the name of the sixth Rebbetzin was Nechama Dina. That's the name I was looking for, okay? Chaya Mashka is the seventh Rebbetzin, and Nechama Dina is the sixth Rebbetzin. And you, the fellas who know my dear friend Barry Lieberman, his mother was very close to both Rebbetzins. And she was the translator from Yiddish into English when the sixth Rebbetzin held press conferences, because the sixth Rebbe had a stroke, he couldn't speak clearly. His wife used to hold press conferences and relate his ideas. And Barry's mother, Rose Lieberman, she was the translator into English. Nechamadina, that's the name. Nechamadina Hendel is the one who teaches in Greek. Anyway, coming back here, what went on in the Europeisha Yeshiva, all right, I got to Mir. I got to Mir in 1930. All right, I learned in Slabatka in 1925. What went on in this yeshiva? There were students who were ga'ainim already. You had to make an appointment to speak with them at learning. They were like called the Arisha B'chabura. Yankel Shiv was the Arisha B'chabura. With all the Talmidim and Kletz, the survivors and the Americans, he was heads and shoulders above everyone. And to talk with him, you felt you were talking with Gottlieb. Now, in my juvenile mind, I had a dear friend from YU, from 51, the day I entered. You all know the name, Rabbi Aaron Lichtenstein, the babe we called him. The Yankel Shiv and the babe looked exactly, they both had very large foreheads. And when you spoke with them in learning, you could see they would be thinking like this. And until today, I believe when I see someone with a large forehead, he's a gaon. Okay? Now, what happened to Reb Yankel Shiv? He married the Briska Rav's daughter. Lives in Yerushalayim. Completely lost to the crowd here. The Briska family, Kailel, teaching. The only time I had contact with him here is, believe it or not, in the final years of BMT, I was no longer teaching there, but it was still around, that's before Torah Shraga takes over, we had a student, and the student here, as I mentioned, Yankel Shiv, his Rebbe comes to me from BMT and says, the word went out that you know Rabbi Yankel Shiv. We have his nephew here in BMT. And I got to meet the nephew when he went there for Shabbos, and I sent regards. I got back regards, and the nephew is mother, although the sister of Yankel Schiff, it was a part of the greater so-called modern Orthodox world. But that was Rabbi Yankel Schiff married the Brisker Rav's daughter. That's two of the Brisker Rav's daughters survived. One married Rabbi Chil Michel Feinstein, the Rav's cousin, Rabbi Moshe's nephew. That wedding took place when the Brisker Rav was alive. There too, there was a whole story. He was in America. He loved the Rav. He was teaching with the Rav. He helped the Rav in Boston. And right after the war, they told him, Untvidara, are you going back to marry her or not? So he went back to marry her. Yankel Schiff too married the daughter, but it was after the Brisker Rav died. He was learning. Marriage didn't affect these people. It was like the Altamira. You had to hit them over the head when they were in their 30s. It's time to get married. So that was Yankel Schiff. Very, very impressive figure. Then there was Moshe Hirsch. I'd only use the word Reb because here I'll tell you an interesting story. Do you recognize the name Moshe Hirsch? Foreign minister of the Eidah Haredit, of the Neturah Kater, I should say. Okay, you've heard the name, you saw him in the... what he would do to the Israeli government. He refused in the 70s, I'll never forget this, he will not speak to any Israeli Rishayim Gemurim. So the TV wanted to interview him. He stood on a mountain, and they were on another mountain, and they used long-range camera to interview him and showed it on TV, so he could say he was not interviewed. He was just talking to himself on a mountain, and they picked him up. I'm not putting you on. I saw this with my own eyes. So when Moshe Hirsch was a Brooklyn boy, I can still remember him sitting in the corner. He's not alive now. His son tries to be the foreign minister. A Brooklyn boy sitting in the corner, learning all the time, singing. I could see his face in front of me with the niggin. And we were friendly, nice guy. I come in Aliyah, 69, I go to see him. I felt particularly close to him. And I say to him, B'zeh HaLashon, Moshe, what happened to you? Neturah Kater? Rabbi Aaron Kotler, our Rebbe, was Neturah Kater? A good of Israel? What are we talking about? Your light years more to the right of him. He says, you didn't know the way the Rosh Yeshiva really thought. I used to speak with him privately. And you see, that approach I have heard time and again. Yitzchak, take Moreno Rabbeinu, I don't want to mention names now, members of his family, they write about the Rav, you don't recognize who they're writing about. They're writing the Rav, they make him so right-wing. So you go over, you'll say to them, and I've said to them, what are you talking about? That's the Rav. You're describing yourself, not Rebbe. And you'll get the same answer. I'm his nephew. I dealt with him privately. You understand? You can't win with this. But I was so angry when I walked away from Moshe Hirsch and then when he carried on a parishman at Sibor. All right. Then there was a fella, Reb Getzler Rosenblatt. Anyone recognize the name? Anyone here from Kew Gardens Hills? You'll recognize in a minute. Getzel always had a good voice. Maybe he's related, I don't know. Rosenblatt. He was the Baal Menagen in the yeshiva. He was a little chubby guy, a shtickle chassidish, always smiling, always pleasant. Friday, Shabbos afternoon at Shalosh Shuras, they sang a little. It was rare. I don't even recall if we sang the Smiris Shabbos morning, Friday. But Shalosh Shuras, I remember. And Getzel would introduce a different niggin every Shabbos afternoon at Shalosh Shuras. And there's Reb Aaron. This was the Shabbos Reb Aaron was spending in the yeshiva. And B'dechilu Rechinu, everyone is sitting and looking at the Rosh Yeshiva. You have to understand, it was a small yeshiva, yet 100 B'sach HaKol. And Getzel is, Shir HaMalos B'Shuv Hashem on top of old Smokey. And the niggin is very, I don't have a voice. If I'd be a woman, there'd be no shine of Kalisha, take my word for it. So Reb Aaron was singing. Reb Aaron Cutler, he loved the Niggun. And he says to him, get some Nachamal, Nachamal. And a few of the fellas knew what was going on. We were hysterical, you know, we were sitting there. The Alta Mira had no idea, the Alta Kletzka, I should say. But that was Getzel. Now, what happens with Getzel on Vlai Place in Kew Gardens Hills, a block right near the library before the mikveh, he opened a shul, and that shul became a real beautiful shtibble. That's where you have minyanim, mincha, marav.
Yeah.
That's Getzel, Getzel, El Yakim, Harav El Yakim, excuse me, Harav El Yakim Rosenblatt. It has mincha and marav every half hour, all afternoon, well into the night.
And
I don't know.
Could be.
But I was out of New York at the time. I was in the Rabbinate, and then I was in Israel. But then later, I got to know Kew Gardens Hills. Now, and he did something else. He has Sheyurim, their classes for Balei Tshuva. And a lot of young people, he has people teaching. I have a friend who worked for Phillips Brothers. And this friend, a dear friend, the Musmach of the Yeshiva, is a genius in math, a very bright fellow. Genius in math. So his job was, he would be up all night working for Phillips Brothers, making a decision where to invest the money that was free the next day. In other words, if you have $1 billion at your disposal, do you turn it into Mark? Do you turn it in today? Do you turn it into the Bitcoin? You follow me? What's going on? The Bitcoin was all the way up. Now it's down. I have a Talmud that Steve Gross gave me. I said to Steve, explain to me a Bitcoin. I remember I learned economics. They taught you the money that a country issues is based upon its wealth. We have, Baruch Hashem, wealth here. We have, I don't know what we have. We have gas, we have farms, we have citrus fruit. We make atom bombs here. We have something we can sell, Baruch Hashem. But what does a Bitcoin have? So he explained to me. It's not for now. I see all the newspapers today trying to explain it. So he would tell them in the morning what to do with the money. And then he would daven shacharis and go to sleep. By the mid-90s, the computer takes over. And what he worked on all night, they had a computer program that within 10 minutes, they would have a definitive answer what to do. So he was now redundant. So they retired him. But they retired him that he would never have to work again. They took good care of him. It's Phillips Brothers, Jesselsons. So he now is bored. It's not good to be retired when you're young yet. And he would teach every morning after davening, stay in the Beit Medrash and teach Balei Tshuva. Big schut. So that's Getzel. He married a B'nai Akiva girl from the Bronx, Telma Glitzman. And you know, whenever I see him, and we're all older, I'm walking with a little bit of energy yet, Baruch Hashem. But it brings back so many memories. Then, of course, there was the Lakewood person who was not a student when I was there, but everyone was talking about him. And in retrospect, it may have entered to the anti-Chabad feeling in Lakewood, and you all know who I'm talking about, Reb Shlomo Lekalbach. I have a vote that some of the Haredi yeshiva can't boast about their most famous graduates. Chevron, their most famous graduates, Chaim Herzog, Shlomo Goren, Gorenchik, you understand? They can't boast about it. Menachem Elon, these are their most famous graduates, but they can't boast about them. They're Hashkafas. Shlomo Lekalbach was a gong. But you all know a Yekesha background goes to Chaim Berlin, it goes to Lakewood, Kletz, becomes a Litvak. And winds up a Chabadnik. He left Lakewood to go to Chabad, and that caused a tremendous storm. Now, Shlomo Lekalbach, the stories you heard about him, so most of the people in Lakewood, they were like, when they would talk of Shlomo Lekalbach, what a tragedy. He could have been at Kensein, the rest of Rosh Hashiva, he could have been the greatest Rosh Hashiva, the greatest Gaon. He had to go to outreach, get involved with Chabad, with the Rebbeim, with Shosh and Agachet HaPkara. What's interesting about Kalbach, he continues to haunt us. And right when I said in class, when I dealt with Chabad a number of years ago already, People are quoting me. It's now, I don't know if you're following the websites, but Me Too, you're all aware what I'm talking about. Me Too has launched a tremendous counter-reaction to all that we have before us. And if you recall, I praised Chaim Dalfin's book. He actually interviewed women that had claims against Kalbach. I'm shivering, shaking, because Malka's cousin, first cousin, told me stories about Kalbach. And I don't listen, you know, people were not Shemesh Shabbos about whether they know Kalbach, Shmalbach. She's imagining it. The stories she told us are exactly what 15 other women are claiming and adding to. So tell me, do we have a right to sing Kalbach? Remember the whole Machlokes, Reb Moshe Feinstein, Reb Menashe Klein? We've dealt with some fascinating topics in class, though I have to say, nothing equals if Einstein walks into the room, do we make a bracha? What bracha do we make? And Reb Menashe Klein's conclusion, make a bracha, he's lucky we're not cursing him. Wherever, and I, Baruch Hashem. But it's an interesting question. It just came up again. What are we singing, Kalbach? Me too. Why do we let him get away? And he there's no question that he had sexual problems. You can't hide it. You can't sweep it under the closet. But when I lived in Lakewood, Kalbach, the name came up, Yom V'Laila. Then Kalbach's friend and my idol, an idol that broke entirely, Davy Hartman. David Hartman, he was one of the early hotshots of Lakewood. David Hartman's background, he's from a Yerushalmi family. Parents went to America after World War I. Davy, one of a number of very fine, outstanding brothers, one brighter than the other, one more capable than the other. One should live and be well. Only one is alive now, Leo Hartman in Hillcrest, a wonderful individual. And Davy and Shlomo were friends from Lakewood. I can still remember the Brit of Davy's son, who took over now, Daniel Hartman, rabbi, doctor. Everyone is a rabbi, doctor. You know, when I got my doctorate, you know what, Elima, you walked with Abba Marcus yesterday. His younger brother, who's no longer with us, my dear friend Eli, said, you got a doctorate? You know where it's written in the Torah about your doctorate? Raid. Kishichetamcha. Rabbi, doctor, raid. Kishichetamcha. That's where it's written in the Torah. Go down. Anyway, I still remember the Brit. I see it in front of my eyes. I'm sitting here, Shlomo is next to me, Davy is over there, and they're winking at each other. The old friendship from Lakewood. And David Hartman, what a kanoi. Why you is not slim enough? I write about it in Washington. I describe David Hartman. Did I look up to him? And where he went later in life. That's Davy. Reb Yitzchak Feigelstadt, he already was a survivor. I believe he should live and be well. Correct me if I'm wrong. Rosh Yeshiva of Long Beach, of the Yeshiva in Long Beach. He was a survivor, but young enough to Americanize, to open a yeshiva, and to succeed. Recognize the name? Looked up to in the Agudat Yisrael world. Reb Moshe Eisenman, anyone here from Baltimore? So there were two Reb Moshe Eisenmans. There was the uncle, who was a survivor, who opened the yeshiva in Vineland, and the nephew, who went to Baltimore and became a, not just a Rebbe, but very big in Machshevet Yisrael. And I knew both of them from Lakewood, and remember that we could never forget. Same name, the uncle, the nephew. Nephew was Anglo. I believe he came to Lakewood from England, if my memory is correct. Then there was Reb Leib Hyman. Reb Leib Hyman, anyone here from Bayit Vegan? Reb Leib Hyman, he died a few years ago. Reb Aaron appointed him as a special Rebbe to look after the kids that had come from Yeshiva Shkibitz Chol Hanan. Reb Leib always with a smile. I don't believe he and his wife ever blessed with children, but always with a smile. Alive, Lebedik, American, knew the reality. Later opens a kollel in Boston, which did not succeed. It's interesting that in the Boston area, Lakewood did not catch on like it did in Los Angeles and like it did in Chicago. He later goes in Aliyah, and he becomes the Rav of the big little Shushu in Bayit Vagan. Anyone from Bayit Vagan will tell you they've heard the name. And finally, Achron Chaviv, I want to mention two names, two friends, two individuals that I was to interact with many years later as well, who probably were the biggest success story of the original decade of Talmidim in Lakewood. And all of you know that one of the finest yeshiva high schools, Beit Medrash, is the Philadelphia Yeshiva. Philadelphia Yeshiva, you have to understand, Philadelphia was a city where God was not allowed in. The entire city became the hotbed of the conservative movement. What Philadelphia was like originally, all the Jews who came there, when my grandfather came to America 120 years ago, he came with three brothers. One brother was a Voloshina graduate, wound up in a Rav and a Sheikhet in the Massachusetts area. Bedford, Taunton, I write about him in Washington. The other two brothers went to Philadelphia. They were all from. Oh, what's left? Nothing with nothing with nothing. Philadelphia had Chashuva Rabbonim. But they didn't allow YU graduates in. We'll talk about it. We'll get there in the Monday class. They were worried. They're panasa. A YU graduate can buy chametz, can sell your chametz too. They were worried, Pasha. Didn't allow a JTS graduate. Wonderful. And JTS conquered the city because it was exactly what they were looking for in the second generation. Reform Judaism is too Goyish, and Orthodox Judaism is too Yiddish. Conservative, beautiful, ethnic origins, respected, melting pot of America. And all the big shots of the seminary came out of Philadelphia. And there was nothing there. And Reb Shmuel Kamenetsky and Reb Elia Tzvei recognized the names. Reb Shmuel Kamenetsky, the son of Reb Yaakov, and Reb Elia Tzvei, whose father was an old-time Voloshiner, an old-time Litvish, I should say. Before World War II, was a mamish, 100% a Litvish Talmud Chacham. You knew him, Vic. And they went to Philadelphia. And I was in the rabbinate there when they just opened. It was the second, third year. We were very friendly. They were in Overbrook. I was in Lower Merion, Balakin, 20 minutes away. Very friendly. And very interesting individuals. Rabbi Yitzvei, all right, he was a little bit more right than Reb Shmuel Kamenetsky. Reb Shmuel has tremendous insight how he was able to match Lakewood with the American reality, with the Philadelphia reality. And today, Philadelphia is a shame duffer. And Charlie, do you know that we, you and I, and Morty, and Yitzchak, we owe a great debt of gratitude to Philadelphia Yeshiva. You know why? Because there's a fellow who went there from a right-wing home. Parents sent him to right-wing Yeshiva. His name, Arnold Lustiger, Luster J, Cardinal of Paris. His cousin went to Philadelphia Yeshiva, sends his kids to right-wing institutions. And Arnold, brilliant, PhD oil, and it works for Esso, I think it's called, right? The big gas oil blows up. Am I right? Esso, it's called.
Exxon.
How's it called?
Exxon.
Why did I say Exxon with
an
X? Oh, thank you. New words, I'm right. Don't please tell me. When you left America, it was Esso. Today it's Exxon. So, sein gesund. So he was in university getting his doctorate. And the Rav came to the UFP in the 70s and gave a talk. It's the only time he ever heard the Rav teach. Arnold Lustiger is the greatest expositor of the Rav's Torah that we have with us today. We have to kiss his fingers. He's already put out 4 volumes on Chumash, and I know a little bit about the Rav's Torah. No one has done it as beautifully, as clearly as Arnold. I think we have through Vamidbo, we're waiting now for Devarim. You have no idea what a debt of gratitude we... Siddur, fine. The Chumashim are overwhelming. You understand? The Siddur, fine, but the Chumashim...
But you know something? If you listen to the Rav in Boston,
He left out. He didn't have a lot. Relax. Yitzchak, I told you, in 50 years, you will be proud to say you knew Aaron Rakefet. Leave it for 50 years from now, please.
This is a sin.
Yitzchak, you're not convincing me. I believe me, it's a sin. I'm dealing with it. I live it. I know what the sin. I know what we're talking about.
You justify it because... Yitzchak, 800,
you're underestimating, please go buy bitcoins, let's come back. Yitzchak and I go back to high school, we were both in B'nai Akiva, he was in Boston, I was in, we know each other many, many decades, we share many life experiences. Yitzchak, in life, sometimes you can't force an issue. You have to let it rest. And Ribbono Shel Olam takes care of it. Yeah, give it a chance. Okay. So, my dear students, I've given you a bit of a picture of Lakewood, of the students I recall fondly. Not all of them I'm proud of. It's fascinating, too, when you compare it to Yeshiva University, or Chaim Berlin, for that matter, or Teir Vadas, for that matter. No yeshiva in modern times turns out 90%. We're lucky if we succeed with 70. There are many facets, many factors at work. The outside world hits upon us. Children have to be taught from an early age what I taught my own children, my own grandchildren. I used to say to my grandchildren, I still remind them, they're older than me now and smarter than me, but they never forgot the message. I'd stand them, Rechov Palmach. You kids have everything. You're growing up here and your grandparents buy you whatever you want. And you, what's going to be when you're older? You're going to be drunkards and drugs. And you better remember, I don't care what you do in life. You can be atomic scientist. But never forget, Reshit Chachma, finish it. Yirat Hashem. Without that, you're a monkey who's educated. You're nothing more. And boy, it impacted. And you have to tell kids when they're young, there's a big world out there. You see, these morons that think you can solve the problem, the computer's us, or this is us, or that's us, you're solving nothing. Because the kids who want to are going to get a computer. What's the big deal? A kid walks out of Meir Shearim, walks a few blocks away, sees the billboards advertising a movie with half-naked women. No. How are you going to... You can't hide. There's a reality. But you have to educate. And I have to say, we suffer. We don't win all the time. There was a Supreme Court judge, there's Chaim Cohn. Chaim Cohn was a product. He came all the way out from Germany, a totally from Jew, a Merkaz HaRav person. Ugh. You should see his decisions later. You take Haaretz. For years, their most important writers on religious Israel, problems in religious Israel, social problems, etc. Panovich graduates, one after another. I have books in my house, the 80s, the 90s. Panovich graduates, one after another. We don't win them all. But we do win a good percentage, and Lakewood can be proud.
May I ask, I'm sorry to interrupt.
Yeah.
What was Moshe Feinstein's final thought about listening to Shlomo Kalman?
Listen. Everyone listened. The psak was that if he wrote it while he was still becheskat kasheret, it's okay. And then you got to know what sins was he accused of. As far as Reb Moshe knew, all he was accused of was mixed seeding, which I said to you, the Lubavitcher Rebbe was proven wrong. He threw Kalbach out because he wouldn't be. Kalbach had said to the Rebbe, if I'll say only men should come and no women, or only women and no men, I'll have two people. So the Rebbe said, it's good enough if you have two people. Today, ask any shaluch, shlucha, whoever saw Chabad, have separate seating outside of davening. You follow? I was there at the retreat, 1,200 people. I was sitting next to my wife on one side, a Rebbitzin who had been my talmid on the other side. You understand? It's inevitable. We lost that battle. And it's not maybe not a loss. It's the way we live. It's the look into the levush, to the levush of the Maram Yafo. We're going back to a contemporary of the Rama, and he took issue with the Rama on the separate seating at Sheva Brachas. You know, the Rama's psak is that. The Shechina is not there, and he said, nowadays, when we're used to interacting with women, this is a reality. We have to teach God. I suffer. We don't publish names of women. Did you ever hear of such a thing?
In Mishpacha magazine, they don't put a name in, they just put initial.
A hospital just came out, you saw the ad? They have 32 new midwives, I believe it is, and they can't show their pictures. So they show you a purse belongs to this midwife, a chumash belongs to this midwife. That's not a joke. It's in all the, it may even be in that magazine. They take ads. And how many years experience? Got so up it. Now, if all this shtick would result in less sex crimes, I'd go along with it. Bal kachi ana amein. I love Torah more than anything. It helps Torah. We have more sex crimes than ever. And the sex crimes are above all denominations of Torah Judaism. In our world, that rabbi up north, I can't even talk about it in front of human beings. I'm ashamed. And the women, some of them went public now. I mean, it's unbelievable. That's in our world. Maklev from the Aguda world, the Mashkiach, I can't even forget it. Let's not even talk about it. So with all the shtick, all you do is, you have to have a different approach. The approach has to be the men and women in the world. God created a Yetzer Hara, which is the Yetzer Tov. Cite the sources that I cited years ago. That called me Tov Miod on the Yetzer Hara. Without that, none of us would be sitting here. And we have to learn to live with dignity. We're not animals. You understand? We have to control. All right, leave it for another time. My dear friends, I have arrived. We've now spoken about Rav Henoch, Rav Meir, Rav Aaron Kotler. There was a man at Yeshiva University that most of the students didn't pay attention to. He was always immaculately dressed. His rabbinish garb, long clothes, black, white shirt, tie. Oh, not a stain on his clothes. Chazal say a Talmud Chacham who walks out with a stain is chayev mitas v'chol Hashem. Oh, it was a sight to see. Always tall, good-looking, walking, never running, never walking too slow. Seemed so totally organized. Yiddish was his tongue, of course, his language. Many of the students looked upon him as a vestige of the old Europe and never sought him out. Their attitude was they tolerated him. I'll use that word. It's the mashgiach, the yeshiva. But some of us sought him out, and his influence upon me is dominant. I can't tell you whose influence is greater, the Rav or Yaakov Moshe Cohen Lessen. He opened up a world to me that I live with until this very moment. Unfortunately, it's the world that makes demands, and the older I get, the more upset I get, because the masses simply are interested in themselves, self-centered, pleasure, don't think beyond the moment. And this was a world, a pristine, sacred world of thinking, of spiritual growth, of Musa. He opened up the world to me of Rabbi Yisrael Salanter. I need not tell you how many lectures I have given on all aspects of what happened with the Musa movement and how much I have been privileged to publish. The man's name, Rabbi Yaakov Moshe Cohen Lessen, spelt in English L-E-S-I-N. It's the way he spelt it. His years, to put him into context, 1889-1975. He was born in the Minsk area, studied in Slabodka, as we call it, prominent Talmud of the Alta of Slabodka. And you have to understand, the Alta of Slabodka, Rav Natan Zvi Finkel, was a Talmud of Kelm, but he yet Simcha Zissel Breude of Kelm, but he yet saw Rabbi Yisrael Salanter. So the I'm talking about Rav Lessen. I am four generations removed from Rav Salanter, Rav Yisrael Salanter, to the Kelmer Rosh Yeshiva founder, Rav Simcha Ziv Breude, Rav Yaakov Moshe Cohen Lessen, and I have the only smicha that Rav Lessen gave all the decades he was in the United States. I went to Salanter Yeshiva as a kid. Not that we knew anything about Salanter. It's like Dov Revel Yeshiva in Queens. I don't know if it still exists, but you can ask all my, many of my family that's left in the States went to Dov Revel. Not one of them knew one word about Dov Revel, who he was and why the yeshiva is named after him. So he went to Salanter. All right, it's another name. The other yeshiva in the Bronx was Reb Chaim Moser. Who knew about Reb Chaim Moser Grzynski? But that's what the yeshiva was called. That's where Rabbi Levitz went, Professor Levitz, who teaches in the Kollel. We're contemporaries, but two different yeshivas. Now, what's fascinating here with Slabodka, it fits on the general literacy yeshiva scene. Reb Chaim Soloveitchik destroyed the Lithuanian ability to paskin. Anyone who studied the period knows I'm not exaggerating. This is axiomatic. Reb Chaim came up with the method of understanding, of analyzing what we popularly call shnei dinim. There are two approaches, chefza, gavra, etc. Can go into more examples, but it take me another 20 minutes, not for now. A specific law for this case or a general concept in halacha? It's unbelievable what Reb Chaim came up with. Everyone loved Reb Chaim's method. He became the most popular personality in the Lashon. When the Netziv wanted to appoint his son, Reb Chaim Berlin, as his successor, the students demanded Reb Chaim Soloveitchik, and that fight basically closed the Lashon Yeshiva down. Because now we know from the Russian archives, the Secret Service, Secret Police archives that were revealed after the fall of communism, we know that the Russians were worried stiff. If yeshiva boys can fight like that, soon they'll be fighting the Tsar, and already a high percentage of revolutionaries were Jews. So that's why they closed the Lashon Yeshiva down. For years we were raised, secular studies, secular studies, nothing to do with it. For years they were supposed to teach Russian, and they finagled, they taught, they didn't teach, they bribed the guy who came, they gave him vodka, but they got away with it. But this already, the Tsar's head is at stake. They took it much more seriously. So Reb Chaim was Reb Chaim. He goes to Brisk, and all of you know when he goes to Brisk, he makes a t'nai with the Briska community that he will not paskin shilas. They have to go to the Briska Dayan Rav Simcha Zelig Riga, who was an old Valashina before, to use Mori Rebbe's words, he was the Rebbe, before Matan Torah, before Reb Chaim gave a new Torah, and he knew how to paskin. Rebbe Yerushalmi, the Rav Sadek grandfather, was also before Matan Torah. They knew how to paskin, they knew the Yoredei Halacha L'maaseh, every syllable. But Reb Chaim was Reb Chaim. No, Slobodka graduates are going into the rabbinate. Jews ask questions. Rabbi Lessen went into the rabbinate. He was a Rav, a Shtut Rav, in a number of communities in Lita. When Slobodka reorganized after World War I, and everyone came back from exile, so the Alta saw we have to know how to paskin. And he opened up a kollel for the top minds in Slobodka, a kollel. Yeshivas didn't have kollelim then. You got married, you left the yeshiva. You became a rav, you took a job, you taught, you went into your father-in-law's business. He opened up a kollel for Hora'ah, to teach the young men how to paskin. Now give me one name, the top graduate of that kollel, Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky. One of the fundraisers for the kollel, if not the most preeminent fundraiser, was Rabbi Yaakov Moshe HaKohen Lessen. And that ultimately saves his life, because he winds up in Switzerland, I believe it was Switzerland, fundraising 39, he doesn't go back to Europe. He goes to America. He has a son-in-law who's American running away from Europe as well, a name that you all will recognize, a name that in every issue of Mishpacha you see advertisements to buy his teachings, Rav Avigdor Miller, who later becomes the Mashgiach in Chaim Berlin, and afterwards, or concomitantly and afterwards fully, the Rav of a young Israel. I think it's young Israel of Rugby. It's part of the greater Flatbush area. You can correct me if you're from Brooklyn, but that's what I understand. It saves his life. Now, what's amazing about Rabbi Yaakov Moshe HaKohen Lessen, and I didn't know this until years later, what this man went through. You open up his first volume, and he published many volumes, all Musa, we'll talk about them in a few minutes. Derech HaChaim, first volume, 1947, Sichat Musariyot B'Inyani Yireh Amidot V'Da'at Torah, Pashiyot HaTorah, Mayeit Yaakov Moshe HaKohen Lessen, Mashkiach Ruchani B'Yeshivat Rav Yitzchok Chanan in New York, Milifnim Ravi Avbeitin B'Neistat Lita. Go to the next page. The volume is dedicated in memory. My wife, Bela Rachel, my son Shmuel Nissen, my son Avram Yitzchak, my daughter Sarah Rivka, my brother Yitzchak with his entire family, my sister Sarah Rachel, my sister Hasha with her entire family, my sister Devorah with her entire family. Gentlemen, could you imagine losing the wife of your youth, most of your children, only two reached America, that daughter married to Rabbi Avigdor Miller, and a son who was a Rav I think it was also involved in Hashgacha. That son has a son, it's a grandson of the Mashgiach, who's a very famous surgeon on the coast, a Yiddish tzaddik in the greater Los Angeles area.
Hand surgeon.
A hand surgeon. And you know him. How do you know him?
He was in school. He was MTA with me.
He was an MTA with you. So, and you know what he devotes his life to? What his special project is? He has done wonders for the Gentiles in Lithuania who saved Jews during the Holocaust. See, he's very sensitive to the Hasidim of Tolomei, the state of Israel, but you can't do it all. You need individuals. And he goes, he went back, I don't know what's going on today, but I know he went back and forth many times. And he's my connection. We became, he contacted me. And many years ago in the Kola, it was yet in, when, before the rooms were revised, it was where the offices are today of the Abraham program, we made a big event. We gave a class. Afterwards, we had a collation. And I presented him with a copy of the smicha his grandfather gave me, and he gave me copies of his grandfather's smicha. I have copies in my files back at 18 Berlin. So those were the two that survived, his father and the woman married to Rabbi Victor Miller. Now I want to ask you a question. Look, the problems we have today in Israel, where we have the greatest amount of Holocaust survivors. How much money is invested by the Israeli government and reparations money and the German government, how many of these people remained normal after going through all this? And even if they function normally, let's say, for 20, 30 years, but the older you get and the more the memories haunt you, what could have been, and you have to say about Rav Lesson, wow. This man is special. To lose so much, and Yitzchak did not know about this until today. Am I right or wrong? We never suspected. We saw a man totally at ease, balanced, totally loyal to the teachings of Rabbi Yisrael Salanter. Okay. Let me say something else. As you gather from these lectures, my growing up, I was deeply affected by people who were not American, were not born in America, did not grow up in America. Rav Henk Fishman, Rav Aaron Cutler, Rav Lesson, Rav Soloveitchik, Rav Gerelick, Rav Bunstein. You go on and on with the list. Rav Shmuel Eizer Volk. Not born, did not grow up. And, you know, these people were coming from a different world. As I write in Washington, Hitler killed 6 million, affected the lives of another 5 million. Their entire way of thinking, their entire gestalt, their entire lifestyle was totally terminated. And it reflected in their personalities. Some were at home. Some were cynical. Some raised their hands and said, America's a farce. Nothing great can come out of it. I think the rub was most dramatic, and you see it on the websites today, when he spoke about Europe, his childhood, his experiences. The story with the Motzoi Shabbos that so impacted upon me is now all over the world. The Rav told the story many times. So now there's a recording. I tell the story in my work on the Rav, word by word, quoting, translating the Rav from Yiddish to English. Now they have where he tells it a different time, at a tshuva drasha towards the end of his public life. And everyone listening, people come over to me, ah, they can't believe their ears. Now, you didn't hear the Rav talk about Boston that way. Okay, well, this is, he's used the influence. I have to say about Rav Lesson, I never heard any negativisms. The man was seemingly totally at home in the American reality. And I'll give you the Rakefet theory. And though when I say theory, I may be right, I may be wrong. This is not Das Teira, you understand. This is an attempt to understand. But I think I have something. And this takes me to the Monday class. In our Monday class, this is Monday, but we're now not in our regular classes. And in our Monday class, we're attempting to do, it'll take a number of years, the history of the rabbinate of the United States, 1902 to 1960. It's a world that I have on that topic. Some I've published, but most of what I'm teaching is from research not published yet. Now, the Agudas HaRabbanim, the Union of Orthodox Rabbis in the United States, is a minor league organization. After World War I, it becomes the major league player. From World War I to World War II, there's no more important rabbinic organization on the United States scene, certainly on the Torah scene. And they become their brother's keeper. And we'll go into details why this happens. But the early 1920s, the yeshivot are trying to reestablish themselves. They're coming back after going into exile in World War I, after World War I, coming back. And they need a lot of money. Europe is in a great depression. In addition, Palestine is on the map. And the Yeshiva Yashan and the Yeshivat in Palestine. And they need a lot of money. And where's this money going to come from? And in America, you have the Central Relief Committee. Central Relief Committee, we'll talk about in detail, represented the Orthodox Jews, the East Europeans essentially, those that made it in America and recognized they're their brother's keepers. And this was the address to raise money. And in 1924, it began in 23, but it comes to reality in 1924, they come up with this dream. We're going to bring three of the greatest rabbis in the world to the United States to raise funds for the Europäische and the Palestinian Yeshivat. They set a goal of $1 million. Think what 1923, 1924 money, $1 million. That's a millionaire. It's not like today. Anyone living in Jerusalem, the chances are you're a millionaire. You just figure out what your apartment is worth, and you put your car into it, and your pension plan, you're over $1 million right there. I told you, they just did a survey. They said that, what was it, 19,800 people in Israel are millionaires. Baloney. In Jerusalem, two-thirds of the city are millionaires. So, right, these are facts. $1 million. They brought three rabbanim. This story I'm about to tell you, I'll end off the class with it. It's very dear and precious to me. I'll tell you why. When I was a junior in college, they announced a $50 United States Bond Prize for the best original essay in Jewish history. Someone gave the Yeshiva 50, the YU, Yeshiva College. I did an essay on the 1924 Rav delegation visit. It's my first published article afterwards. This is in Rakafet Aron, Chelek Aleph now. First published article, Jewish. What was it called? The OU publication, not Jewish Action, but the one that preceded it, Jewish Life. It was called Jewish Life. First published article. Published it also in Matmid, in the yearbook. And wow, who'd they bring to America? Who is the most famous rabbi in the world you want to bring to America? The chief rabbi of Palestine, Rav Avram Yitzchak HaKohen Cook. Who is the most chashuv rav in the Eastern European Litvish area? Misnagdash area, the Kovna Rav, Rav Ravram Dovber Kahana Shapiro. There was no chief rabbi in Vilna. I've spoken about this, published about it. It all goes back to Akhmakwekis 200 years earlier. Who will be the chief rabbi? Well, Sabbath will have no chief rabbi. But Kovna, the second greatest city, Rav Ravram Dovber Kahana Shapiro, the Devar Avraham. Who is the third person they brought? The Lavush Mordechai. Reb Moshe Mordechai Epstein, Slabatka Rosh Yeshiva. Now, each Rav needed an assistant. I was just in Ranana, spent the Shabbos, the Friday, so I spoke six times. Boy, can I have used an assistant. Just to, my notes, my this, the people, the questions, the organization. Each one brought an assistant. The Lavush Mordechai brought Rav Lesson as his assistant. So that here you have something very interesting. Rav Lesson spent many months in America long before running away from Hitler in 1939. Many months. But not just many months. You'll say Rabban Kotel was also in America. We spoke about it yesterday, 1935. Visited to race for, yes. Where was Rabban Kotel? Basically, essentially in New York. Speaking in shuls, yeshiva. That's it. The rabbinical delegation was not only all over the United States, but in Canada as well. Every big Jewish city, they were hosted. And they raised substantial funds. They never hit $1 million. They didn't half a million, but they came close to a half million already, hundreds of thousands of dollars. They saved the yeshiva in Eastern Europe and in Palestine. Rav Lesson saw America inside out. And it's my feeling that when he came back in 39, he didn't have to adjust entirely. He already knew what awaits him. And he was not cynical. He had a son-in-law who was American. You know where he winds up in America? Rav Lesson? New England. Chelsea, Massachusetts. His son-in-law is in the rabbinate there. They organize a yeshiva there. Rav Lesson, before the Rav is called to New York, he already meets the Rav in New England. They speak in terms of organizing a yeshiva where the Rav will be the Rosh Yeshiva, Rav Lesson the Mashkiach, Slabat Gemusa. He already, my wife has an expression, you're breathing like we're going to Florida tomorrow. Not to Florida, it's Florida to give Sheyurim, my Talmidim there. So we're going to Florida. You're already breathing Florida air. You follow? He already knew what New York, America, New England, Montreal, Toronto, Philadelphia, Boston, wherever the rabbinic delegation went, he was there. He was the Lavush Mordechai's right hand. And he came right into the heart of America. Massachusetts is a far cry from New York, Yiddishkeit-wise, even in 1939-1940. Dov, you hear my theory? I may be right, I may be wrong, but it makes sense. It makes sense. And his son-in-law, the American son-in-law, a lot of memoir literature is coming out now about Avigdor Miller. And finally, I'll end off. All the plans of New England and building and Rav Avigdor Miller, everything came to an end in 1944. And that has to do with one individual who, again, I cry, I plead, a doctorate has to be done on his life, and somehow in YU, no one responds to me. to give me covet, they'll give covet. But to respond on something so basic, Kol Korei Bamidbar. Rav Shmuel Belkin, if you recall my lectures, I described him as a split personality. He was not the Rav. The Rav, you knew who the Rav was. We'll get to the Rav. Shmuel Belkin was a Litvisher yeshiva boy who remained a Litvisher yeshiva boy. And on the other hand, he was a PhD from Brown University with his PhD thesis published by Harvard University, who was president of Yeshiva University, who built Albert Einstein Medical School, Yosef, who could joke around with Albert Einstein and with Cardinal Spellman. You know what he put in Cardinal Spellman. It's classic. We're both wearing skull caps, but there's one difference. Your skull cap is red and your institution is in the black. My skull cap is black, but my institution is in the red. That's of Shmuel Belkin. But in that part of his personality where he was a Litvisher yeshiva boy, he couldn't do enough to bring Litvisher gedolim into Yeshiva University. And in 1944 was a key year. He brought in Reb David Lifshitz, the Tzuvalka. That was the period he brought in Reb Yeruchim Gerelich, Reb Noach Bornstein, and he brought Reb Yaakov Moshe HaKohen Lessen in to become the Mashgiach. And people looked at him. He was totally Musa of Israel Solanta from a different world. Charlie, you knew him. Did you ever attempt to unbutton him and see what was behind that demeanor? Only a few of us were fortunate that we had that drive. We also had to have Yiddish. Did you have Yiddish? No, you didn't have Yiddish. Ayeka. But German, can you speak German?
No.
Also, an Americanized Yeki. What can I say? Your brother in Baltimore, can he speak Yiddish? Also, it's a new world. I see guys in shul. There's a guy with a long beard. This in Yad Tamar. And someone starts speaking Yiddish to him. He says, Ivrit, Ivrit, ani lo medaber Yiddish. I said, Aval amadetav apanovich. Aval akol hayav Ivrit. My dear students, we cut off here right in the middle. First of all, I want to thank you from the bottom of my heart for coming. I really was, figured today, the Brit, the weather, Ivey. But I know many are listening across the world. So I do have students. The problem is I can't touch them, but I see them. I do see them. We'll put it that way. So I want to thank you for filling the room. That's number one. Number two, I want to announce that for the next 2 weeks, there are no shiurim. I'm in the greater Hollywood, Florida area. I'll be giving shiurim all over there, Bal Harbor, Miami Beach, North Miami Beach, Deerfield Beach, Hollywood, of course. Now, we pick up again on Sunday, January 14th. If anyone wants a reminder, the sheets are yours. Number two, again, I want to mention, all of you know that I have a sweet tooth for what's going on in Russia. More than a sweet tooth, but leave it at that. Beginning with tomorrow night at 7 p.m., a 24-hour period, anyone who makes a contribution to Shvut Ami, it will be quadruple. There are three individuals that will match dollar for dollar. So if someone gives $100, it becomes $400. So I appreciate any help. Quickly to reiterate, I have a lot to give out. To reiterate, today, what did we do? We finished up with Baron Cutler. We finished up the Chabad issue. The question of the Hatzalah hangs fire. A lot of people have asked me questions, and it's been on the website, and documents have surfaced. There's no question that Rabbi Aaron and Chabad didn't dance together, that's for sure. How bad the feeling was, I don't know, but if you see from Rav Shach, it could reach heights of differences and heartache. I have to say today, Rav Steinman and Rav Edelstein have a totally different approach to Chabad. Rav Shach was furious when he heard that Rav Avram Pam went Lenachem Avil, the Rebbe, when the Rebbe's wife died, Chayim Mushka. So I mean, to reach that level of difference, it's shocking to me. But all right, these are Gedolei Gedolei Yisrael and Mi Anochi, but Rav Steinman and Rav Edelstein have a totally different approach. You'll understand when I talk about the Rav, and I'm going to maybe at YU at a certain point over at the other side of the ocean. I nimodela Kadosh Baruch Hu that the Rav became my Rebbe Mufak, because he gave me the ability to have a certain lifestyle point of view, but never to be negative to others, to understand others as well. Okay. Then we started Rabbi Yaakov Moshe Cohen Lesson. Obviously, we have a ways to go with him. And then we'll come to the Rav, and then Be'ezrat Hashem will get back to my regular Sheyurim. 2 weeks, not here. Now, a Talmud came over to me, a virtual Talmud came over to me in Ranana, and I made copies. It's very fascinating. It's an open letter to Rabbi Rachman, who had said something against the Baron Cutler, written by Amos Bunim, who was a YU graduate, the son of Irwin, who became a great devotee of Rabbi Aaron Cutler. Very fascinating letter. I am very happy to say Liberal Orthodox Synagogue will stop announcing Mazel Tovs to homosexual couples after OU complaint. Here's that article.
Synagogue,
Rabbi Avi Weiss' synagogue. Overthrowing the Tsar was great for the Jews until it was ended. This is a very interesting article. Because the Mossad got me involved with Russia, I did a lot of, when I went, I read a great deal and did a lot of research. I can actually teach a postgraduate course on communism and the Jewish involvement. But this article is really fascinating and it hits the nail on the head that we Jews were involved in bringing communism around and then communism went and killed us. Now, how much we're involved, there's an interesting thing here with Putin. They try to show it's not as bad as Putin said. What's amazing is you talk about JTS. Do you know that students are criticizing JTS because they supported Trump on Yerushalayim? It's hard to believe what the youth is like today. Rabbis to Trump, Chief Rabbi Yosef, you are fulfilling biblical prophecies. And one of the topics I'm going to talk about in New York, in Florida, they asked me to speak on, is Trump's recognition of Jerusalem a harbinger of Messiah's coming. Okay, Baruch Hashem, I have what to say. Vic was worried, it's his niece who asked me. I said, don't worry Vic, I'll handle it. Also, this is on Lower Lane, same-sex weddings. They're changing. Here's the Rebbe, Dr. Yitzhak Block, a professor of philosophy at the University of Western Ontario. Again, you see the Rebbe gives him advice that not to give up his secular studies. The Rebbe had many different faces. If you came in, a kid of 16, can I go to college? Absolutely not. Just sit and learn in Tomchei Tamimim. If you came in, a kid of 21, and even Rabbi Aaron Cutler, there was a fellow from YU, Deer, who went to Lakewood with me, was older, and he had 1 year left of Yeshiva College. He asked Rabbi Aaron, I want to stay in Lakewood. Rabbi Aaron told him, absolutely not. If you go one more year to Yeshiva College, you get a bachelor's, you save 3 years that you wasted. Think about that answer. Here's Chabad and Rav Shach's anti-Chabadnik. Here, can anyone become a Rebbe? The Rebbe answering a question. It's beautiful. I got a second copy of it. This is unbelievable. It really happened. Kilat Jeshurun hosts a Fabrengen on Yud Tet Kislev. Hanky Lichtstein and everyone there. Unbelievable. Here is again Rav Yitzhak Meir Gur Ayeh, about his relationship with the Rebbe. This is very fascinating. Rabbi Steinsaltz's archives. I know his son, Mendy, and Mendy is interviewed here. What they have found in his archives. It's a world. This is unbelievable, but I've heard about it before. Santa Claus with tefillin on. Chabad came to visit him. I hear this is Santa Claus. I know a kid who went to Santa Claus and Macy's. And Santa Claus told me it's a Leaden and Guten Yeshiva. Yeah, that's why I said here the kid with tefillin. Here's the Rebbe's secret advice for happy marriages. Very good, very solid. I sign on. Here is Trump with what he did for Rubashkin. I mean, you have to give credit. Not that Rubashkin is a tzaddik, I'm not a fool, but 27 years, 28 years for what other people get 5 years? Come on, that anti-Semitism, unbelievable. And here's the Rebbe's letter to a concert in Detroit encouraging the youth. Here is Shurat HaDin going after the Arabs all over the world with lawsuits when they try to undermine Israel. And here's the finest gift I'm giving out today. You gotta be an Israeli to appreciate this. This my son-in-law gave me right after Yom HaTzmut. So I finally went through it. Be'ezrat Hashem. It's an analysis of the religious community in Israel. How we live, how we think, how we divide. It's essentially the Tzioni Dati community. Very, very fascinating. Imagine we have pubs today, glatt kosher, where our youth can go on Thursday night instead of going to the basement. Thursday night was what was the word they use? When you're up all night learning. Mishma night, right. That's the word we grew up with. Mishma night. Today they go and men and women meet, and yet it's very good. Weddings come out of it, and it's kosher, and the environment is kosher. We have comedians who are kosher. I don't know, Rabbi Yeruchim Gerelich wouldn't be so happy. Rabbi Noach Bunchling would be a bit cynical, but Rabbi Penach Fishman would understand it. I want to thank you very much, and to meet again in 3 weeks' time in health and happiness, Das Vedanya. Mazel Tov on the bread. No.